The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan. And joining us this morning, he is a favorite of mine, Dr. Pat Fulgham, talking about prostate cancer awareness. And there's a big golf event coming up called the Joes and Pros. How's it going, Dr. Pat?
Going great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I got to talk to you about the Pros and the Joes because that's the big golf tournament. It's part of Men's Health Awareness. Am I saying that right?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And we've held this tournament now for, this will be our 14th year under this name. So it's quite a long-lived golf tournament in the Metroplex. It's going to benefit the Urology Research and Education Foundation and the Holy Angels, which is a residential facility supporting people with intellectual and developmental difficulties. So two good causes, and I'll tell you a little bit more about Urology Research and Education Foundation in a moment.
Well, first of all, I'm also honored that you asked me to be the MC for it. So I'm glad to be there, and I've done a lot of these, but I'm really, really looking forward to this because, again, it's at a great location. It's a worthy cause. You guys have been doing this for a while now. So it's almost like, you know, it's almost like a who's who. You never know what kind of celebrities are going to be there as well. And there's a lot of people who like to donate their time, talent, and treasure to these golf events. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Pros and the Joes?
Yeah, the Pros and Joes golf tournament is held at Brookhaven Country Club.
Yep.
It has been held at Brookhaven for the last several years. And we've been privileged to have some really prominent folks as our honorary chairman in the past, including Troy Aikman and several others, just to name one. And we're so privileged to have you as our master of ceremonies this year. This year, our honorary chairman will be George Killebrew.
That's my guy.
Yeah, he's got quite a pedigree, having been with the Mavericks, as you know, for many years in the National Rugby League and now the Pickleball Association.
You know, pickleball has taken over the world. In fact, I think Dirk Nowitzki and Jason Kidd are doing a pickleball event. But pickleball is so big, and my buddy Tom Dundon, he's also a big part of the pickleball world. All of a sudden, pickleball is like the thing to be a part of. I mean, I don't know if you know very much about it, but a lot of people are playing it because it's so easy to do. Whether you're older or younger or in between, everybody seems to be able to do a little pickleball.
Yeah, and that's the key, and that's we're big on that because it allows even people with maybe a little more limited mobility to still participate and work up a good sweat and help stay fit. And we know that's a big part of risk reduction and prevention for a variety of diseases, including heart disease and diabetes. But especially in our case, we're interested because we know that being fit and healthy and keeping your weight down is a good way to help reduce your risk of getting prostate cancer.
And see, a lot of people don't even look at it that angle. They just look at it like, oh, I think I can play some pickleball. And again, it's cropped up all over the place, and it's become a nice little opportunity to, like you say, stay fit, but also have a chance to hang out with people and do things with your family or do things with your friends. I mean, it's It's like I said, it's the growth right there is insane. But back to the Pros and Joes golf tournament again, it's going to be on Monday the 25th. You're going to have, of course, the mulligan and raffle tickets available. You're going to have the award ceremony afterwards. You're going to have a golf clinic, and you're going to have the Joe Anders Golf Classic. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, we're privileged this year to do something a little bit new. We've got three courses available to us at Brookhaven. So on one of the courses, we're going to have the Joey Anders Junior Golf Tournament. And Joey Anders, for those of you who may not know, is a very prominent coach and teacher of golf. He was one of Jordan Spieth's first coaches as he came through the Brookhaven system.
Mm-hmm.
And he's developed 30 Division I golfers. So he's got quite a pedigree. He himself was a Class A PGA professional. So this is in part to honor him, and hopefully because we think a lot of kids will be home from school or off school that will involve younger families, because we're finding that if we can develop this habit of thinking about health for the entire family, not just for yourself, it helps people get in the habit of doing things that are healthy and then going to the doctor for regular checkups.
So let's talk a little bit about men's health awareness, in particular prostate cancer awareness, the research, the preventative measures. You invited me out to the hospital to speak and help moderate your conversations with a lot of different guys who were there. Can you talk about prostate cancer awareness and how there are guys who have heard of it but kind of shy away from it?
Yeah, it's a big problem because although it's the most common cancer in men and the second leading cause of cancer death, it turns out that only about 37% of men who should be getting an annual screening test are actually taking advantage of that opportunity. And unfortunately, what that means is there are still cases where men present when they already have prostate cancer that's too far along to be cured. And that's a tragedy because we know that the earlier we diagnose this disease, the better chance we have to either cure it or control it in the long run.
Is the problem, and I'm going to ask you these questions because we've talked about it before, but I'm just setting you up. Is the problem a lot of guys don't either know how to be tested or have a fear of the test or the test result?
Yeah, I think it's a little of all three. For those who don't know, the PSA blood test, which stands for prostate-specific antigen, is just a blood test that can be done by your regular doctor on your annual physical. I think what a lot of men fear is what's called the digital rectal exam, where there's a finger inserted in the rectum to feel the prostate. It's a little bit uncomfortable, and a lot of men have avoided going to the doctor for that very reason. I want men out there to know that there are now some alternative tests that may obviate or keep you from needing to do that particular examination. One of them is a urine test, and there's others being developed all the time. So if that's what's keeping men away, we want them to know that there's an alternative way to obtain some similar information. Nothing really does exactly what the physical exam does, but I'd rather have a man come and get 2 out of 3 instead of none.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to encourage him to do that. And then as far as being afraid that something may be found, I mean, that's always a rational fear, I think, that everybody has. But the truth is, a lot of men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer can be managed just by watching, depending on how aggressive the disease is or how late in life it's diagnosed. And if you do truly have an aggressive cancer, you want it found early so that there's something we can do to get rid of it for you.
Dr. Pat, you mentioned a urine test. It's almost like when guys take a urine test to get a job. You know, you have to pee in the cup. Can you talk about that particular angle of getting awareness or finding out whether you have this or not, and how simple that is, and are there any hindrances to that? Tell us the history of that, because I think that's a huge development for guys who are quote unquote shy about the digital part of the examination.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of work going on in this area. There's urine tests that look for tumor cells that are shed from the prostate into the urine. And so that's one way we may be able to pick it up. There are fragments of RNA and DNA which are shed into the urine. And it's progressed to the point now where you can even do this test as a mail-in test, where you just get a container shipped to your house, you urinate in the cup, reseal the container, and send it off for the testing. And certainly that can be done in the doctor's office or at home if you're shy about even coming to the doctor. But it's certainly an opportunity to avoid the digital rectal exam if that's what's keeping you away. And I think right now the only problem is it may not always be paid for by commercial insurance. So cost may be an issue, but I think that's eventually going to become part of the routine workup.
I think that is a huge, huge development. The reason I say this is because nowadays, I mentioned like jobs, but in the world of athletics, guys have to pee in a cup all the time because they have to make sure they pass their physicals, or they're not, they don't have steroid use in their system or whatever. So it's almost like, okay, you're used to going through the quote unquote protocol and you just do what you need to do. This could actually save your life. And I think that I think it needs to be highlighted just a little bit because it's so simple to do. You just pee in a cup or you pee in the bottle. And as you mentioned, for privacy reasons, I think a lot of guys either get certain medications or they do things where they buy things online, and that's privacy right there. So this is easier than a lot of people think. Am I right?
Yeah, I think it is. And of course, I think men out there should let their primary care physician know what their desire is.
So right.
They can make sure they're getting a test that's really an appropriate test and an approved test, and not just order something mm-hmm. off the internet without some consultation, because you want to make sure you're getting something that will be effective.
Oh, yeah. What are the ages that guys need to be aware of? Some people think, well, by the time I turn 50 or 65.
No, we're actually seeing disease present in younger men all the time. So If you're somebody who's considered at high risk, and that's somebody who's got a positive family history for prostate cancer or a strong family history for any of a variety of other cancers like pancreatic cancer, breast cancer, or colon cancer, or if you're African American, which is a risk factor in itself, You should have your first PSA test at age 40.
Mm-hmm. So 40 is the big number. Just be aware. You turn 40, that's the first thing you should try to do. See where you are.
If you're at high risk. If you're at average risk, then you can probably get your first test at age 45. And then most people would now recommend you be tested annually between 45 and about 70. And you may ask, well, why stop at 70? If you haven't developed prostate cancer by 70, the probability of developing it and suffering from it in your remaining lifetime is relatively low. But I don't know about you, 70 doesn't look quite as old as it used to. And
no.
I think if it's an easy test to do, I probably continue it as long as I'm in reasonably good health.
Exactly. We're talking to Dr. Pat Fulgham. And Dr. Pat, I have to ask you this again, because I think these days, because guys are trying to stay in shape all the time, and I think a way to say it is, you know, men's health awareness. Men's health is big. People go to the stores and they look for different products. I'm talking about, you know, natural workout things to stay in shape, things, any kind of edge or advantage they can get to stay healthy. And I think this is just part of staying healthy. And I like the way a lot of times it just needs to be framed that way. It's like part of your health awareness is to make sure this is a part of the things that you check out and make sure that you're good to go. Are you finding it more nowadays that people are looking at it like that, or are they still looking at it like, oh, I don't want to talk about it?
Yeah, you know, I think the awareness is increasing, and, you know, early detection is something critical that we try to promote, but you can attack it from the direction you're talking about, which is risk reduction and prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the healthy lifestyle and trying to eat healthy and keep your weight down all really matters. So far, we haven't been able to identify a vitamin or a food product or anything else that will guarantee that you don't get prostate cancer. But in general, things that are good for your heart and good for diabetes prevention are also good for risk reduction for prostate cancer. So you can attack this, you know, as simply as just saying, look, I'm going to get out and walk for 30 minutes or an hour every day. that right there reduces your risk of heart disease, and heart disease still kills many times more men than prostate cancer. But you really get a two for one when you do that, because you reduce your risk for heart disease and diabetes and also reduce your risk of prostate cancer.
The guys that fit the category, the high risk individuals, that's what I'm asking about. Who are the high risk individuals? Not just necessarily the ages, but is there a particular type, or can it affect anybody? What size, what shape, what color, what background, what part of the world?
It absolutely can affect anybody, but there are some things that we know are associated with a higher risk. For instance, African-American men have essentially twice the risk of their Caucasian counterparts just on the basis of race.
Mm-hmm.
Then it gets complicated when you start considering lifestyle and culture and some other things, but just being African-American is a risk factor.
Mm-hmm.
People who are very overweight often have something called the metabolic syndrome. And we now know, although we don't know exactly why, we now know that people who have that syndrome, being very overweight, they're at increased risk for prostate cancer. And then finally, a family history is critical. If you've got a father or a brother or a son mm-hmm. with prostate cancer, your risk may be four times that of the general population. So that's another thing I wanted to mention today, was the advent of a different kind of testing called genetic testing for prostate cancer. So let's say, for instance, you were an African-American man, your father had it, his brother had it, your brother has it. And so multiple members of your family have been affected by prostate cancer, or multiple women in your family have been affected by breast cancer, then you may carry a genetic mutation that predisposes you to get prostate cancer yourself. And that seems to be the primary factor in about 12% of men who get prostate cancer. So many of you may have heard of the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes, made most famous by the fact they're associated with an increased risk for breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most men probably don't realize that those same genes, which can be passed to you by either your father or your mother, may put you at an increased risk for prostate cancer. Well, if you think you may be at such a risk, there's a very easy cheek swab test that you can do. It's called germline testing, to see if you harbor one of the five or six major genes that we know are associated with the development of early or aggressive prostate cancer.
Very, very, very interesting. My mind is whirling, because I know when you talk about hereditary, sometimes you think about diabetes, because people say, okay, if you're at risk to become diabetic, it's a lot of it is hereditary. So are you saying it's somewhat similar to that kind of situation and breast cancer?
Both breast cancer and prostate cancer have a hereditary component. Now, as I mentioned,
but not like diabetes, or similar to, or much more like it. Because I'm, like I said, I only mentioned diabetes because a lot of people are aware, if I have diabetes in my family, I'm likely to also get diabetes.
There's no question it runs in families, and the reasons are complicated. At mm-hmm. least some of them are genetic, but a lot of them are lifestyle,
right,
and food choices.
Yep.
And you learn a lot from your family about how you do things. And of course, diabetes, there's certainly genetic components to it. The risk for it can be exacerbated by lifestyle choices.
Mm-hmm.
And so prostate cancer is similar in that way. You can exacerbate your risk by smoking cigarettes or not exercising or carrying too much weight.
Can you talk about the breast cancer and the prostate cancer? And I'm bringing this up because the last time we talked about that, I thought it was significant. A lot of people are very much aware of breast cancer awareness. And in a lot of different sports, especially in the NFL, month of October, there's all kinds of things going on. They paint their shoes blue, or the cleats blue, or they recognize people in their family who they might have lost, or survivors of breast cancer. And I think it's almost like it's so well known that you got to be aware of breast cancer, and women and some men need to make sure they take their tests. Can you talk about men's prostate cancer and how it needs to have the same kind of campaigns? And are there any opportunities where there have been joint things together, like maybe where people can get together and get the same tests or go as a family, a husband and a wife, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, there are some opportunities for screening. Screening fell out of favor a little bit because there was a time when people who really didn't have the appropriate demographics, not the age or the family history, were being screened. And when you screen mass populations, sometimes you identify people who would have been better left alone. So screening has turned really into risk stratification strategies where you can fill out a questionnaire and find out if you have some of the characteristics that would make you someone who should worry about being screened earlier. But frankly, there's already screening in place. All you have to do is talk to your doctor about it, and they can educate you and do the testing in most cases right there in the office. There have been campaigns by the NFL and by Major League Baseball on occasion to help raise awareness about prostate cancer, but certainly much more muted than what we see for breast cancer. And part of that is because women have been such effective advocates for their own health that they've done a lot more to publicize.
Right. Men, like I said, they're trying to get this out in the open more. It's like, it's not a stigma. And it's, you don't have to just do the digital examination or find out that way. In fact, because so many people do so many things online nowadays, they check out websites, they check out whether they're shopping on Amazon or whether they're just out of curiosity, look up Health MD or one of those websites where you can find more information about different products. Is that something that you would encourage, where you can find out more about prostate cancer and if, you know, you may need to take a test or how you're feeling? Are there any indications how you might feel that you say, oh, I better go see my doctor?
Yeah, of course, online can be very helpful, can also be a little misleading sometimes. So
make sure it's on an accredited site. Yeah, make sure it's the real deal. Yeah.
Stay with a reputable site. And obviously, the more you know, the better off you are. So yes, I would strongly encourage that. And one of the things that's good about our golf tournament is we always try to make that event fit our theme. And so we'll have a few words to say about men's health there. We're also going to have a couple of people there who can give additional information about this genetic testing component. If somebody wanted to talk a little bit about it or find out a little bit more about it, we'll have some people there to educate at the time of the tournament.
That is absolutely perfect and wonderful. Is there any new research being done that you're aware of that we mentioned, like you can take the different tests. Now you mentioned the urine test and you also mentioned the blood test. Can you talk about any other developments that you've heard of in the last few months or the last year or two that we haven't touched on, and also talk about the blood test?
Yeah, the blood test is constantly evolving, and we're learning new ways to measure what prostate cancer cells put out into the bloodstream. And then a lot of the new research involves artificial intelligence, looking for patterns in the blood or patterns in the markers. There are now things called biomarkers, which can be gleaned from the blood, and we can learn some things about the microenvironment in the body, which permits cancers to proliferate. So that's going to be helpful for identifying people at risk. We're also involved in a lot of clinical research now that's looking at how to manage people who already have the disease and the disease has already progressed. We're finding that genetic testing also helps if you already have the diagnosis of prostate cancer to find out what specific mutations in your tumor can be targeted either by oral medications or chemotherapy or radiation. And this is what personalized medicine is all about, so that we can now actually evaluate your specific cancer and see what things are most likely to help, thereby reducing complications and side effects of treatment and increasing the odds that they're going to be effective.
Oh, I love
that.
We
always want to find the disease before we get to that point if we have our choice.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And you mentioned the treatment, and if someone in your family or you wind up having prostate cancer, and again, you always qualify by saying how far along it is, what are some of the things, and I'm not trying to scare anybody, but it's like you want people to go have the test so that they won't catch it too late. Can you talk about some of the things you might have to endure if you don't catch it early enough?
Yeah, you know, happily, what happens to men with prostate cancer that has become advanced has changed radically in the last 30 years. The life expectancy now is much, much longer. The treatments are being progressively refined to try and reduce side effects. Mm-hmm. If the disease is very advanced, many times we use techniques to block male hormone production. That has some undesirable side effects, but certainly necessary ones, mm-hmm. many of which can be mitigated. One of the exciting new things that's now come along is we can attach radioactive particles to a certain kind of marker in the bloodstream and then inject that into the patient. And the radioactive particles will go to the cancer cells and deliver radiation directly to the cancer cells, reducing the overall exposure to the rest of the body. So that's ultra targeting that seeks out and tries to destroy cancer cells, reducing the side effects to other organs and parts of the body that we don't want to affect. That's an exciting development. And we've also learned how to combine therapies that we've used for many years and put them into doublets or triplets of therapy, mm-hmm. finding out that extends life expectancy sometimes many years. So a lot of exciting things going on.
That is fantastic. I've asked you this before. I'm going to ask you again. What made you decide to get into this particular branch of medicine?
Well, I actually decided pretty early. I was originally interested in kidney transplants or renal transplantation. But when I was exposed to urology during my residency, I found that it had a very desirable mixture of office, clinic, and surgery. And the surgery often involved technology that I was very interested in, ultrasound, transurethral resection of the prostate, used electric vaporization techniques to try and remove tissue. And now, in the last couple of decades, the advent of robotics has made it a very technically dependent subspecialty. Mm-hmm. It's just been a great journey, and I'm very glad that I chose it.
We are too. And again, because you've been leading the charge. And how long have you been in the Dallas-Fort Worth area doing this? Because I think a lot of people know who you are.
Yeah, I started in private practice in 1987, but I actually went to Southwestern Medical School and did 6 years of residency at Southwestern Medical School in Parkland. Mm-hmm. So I've been in the area for many, many years.
That is fantastic. And again, the big golf tournament is the Monday of Thanksgiving week. We're talking about the pros and the Joes. Can you talk a little bit more about the golf tournament to remind everybody and where they can find more information about it as well? Because this is the 14th year, and you raise not only funds, but you also raise awareness. And I think that's so important.
Yeah, two sites, Pros and Joes Golf Tournament, no spaces, just prosandjoesgolftournament.com. Or they can go to urologyfoundation.org, which is the website for my foundation, and that'll take them to the golf site. I just want to say, I hope you'll come out and join us, because there really is a lot of camaraderie out there. Men are in a circumstance where they can talk frankly with people who, in many cases, have either had prostate cancer themselves or know someone who has. So it's a great exchange of information. It's a lot of fun, and we hope you'll join us on November 25th.
Fantastic. I will definitely be there for sure. And again, thank you for inviting me. And more importantly, thank you for being on the show again, Dr. Pat. It's been a pleasure as usual.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And joining us now is Bonnie Jill Laughlin. She's the founder of Hounds and Heroes, an organization dedicated to lifting the spirits of wounded veterans through rescue animals. Bonnie Jill, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Oh, you're one of our Odyssey partners in crime. I appreciate you joining us.
Yes, I am partner in crime. You nailed it. Yeah.
You know what? You've had such an interesting career. I mean, you're a sportscaster, you're a talk show host. You're a scout for the LA Lakers, the only female scout for the Lakers.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
And then your passion has been animals.
Yep, veterans.
Animals and veterans, and realizing that animals can help people mentally. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate that. I do. But for years, people were like, well, you know, they come back with PTSD or whatever it is, and we don't know what to do. Sometimes all you need is a friend who's a fur.
Yeah, fur baby.
Yep. Fur baby.
Exactly. And I come from a military and law enforcement family. And so for me, it's always been that, you know, I should actually add that I did 19 USO tours overseas.
Look out.
So, and entertaining the troops, 9 to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I saw, Chris, how we take care of our troops as much as we can while they're active. And then when they come back and they have a lot of trauma from being deployed, that we don't take care of them, you know, and we over-medicate them. And I fight for veterans and animals on Capitol Hill and trying to say, hey, we don't need to over-medicate these men and women in uniform. There are other solutions, and I have one, and I've seen how it works. And so the first time I saw how a dog could change a soldier's life, I was like, this works. Take him off the 27 meds that this soldier is on right now. He's hallucinating, Chris, all these different things. He can't even adapt to society. He can't even have a relationship with his family, his wife, his kids. He's sleeping in a closet because, you know,
he can't really sleep. The stress.
Yes.
And the fact that he's seeing things in war that most people will never
see. Right. And so from there, I was able to see how rescuing a dog that otherwise would be euthanized, now taking them, training them, and pairing them with a service member who needs them, whether it is a service dog, a therapy dog, and that can be from TBI, PTSD, amputees. It depends on the severity of, you know, the combat veteran. So I just saw the changes and how they're able to have a purpose in life because they, you know, they're getting up out of bed now because they got to take the dog out.
Right.
They're walking, they're little in society, things. Little things that we take for granted, going to the bank, getting gas, like things that we just don't even think about, right? And so I started to notice, you know, this is something I want to do. And so I formed the Hounds and Heroes in 2010. And then from there, we've now expanded to Hounds, Heroes, and Horses, and horses that I rescue from slaughter and kill pens and off the track thoroughbreds. Now we do equine therapy retreats, and we bring wounded warriors and first responders. And now what I love about this, we also do children of fallen soldiers and disabled children, have them come out. And as you and I both know, an animal can just make a difference, whether you're suffering from these different disorders and different, you know, trauma, that seeing a dog wag its tail, having a connection with a horse just makes your life. There's something about it reaches your soul that people can't do. And I've just noticed the difference. And so for me, it's like it's a win-win because you're saving an animal's life and then you're saving a life of a veteran because we know the suicide rate is alarmingly high.
Yes. I've got to give, I want to go back into your story, how hard it was to start this. All I can say is a lot of people who lived through the pandemic found that their pets helped them so much.
Oh, yeah.
With my family, I got a wife and 3 kids. We've got 2 cats, 2 dogs, a rabbit, and a bearded dragon. And they all get along.
I love that, though, Chris.
Yes, they're not in a cage or they're not in an aquarium. They're just out and about all over the house, inside and out. And I'm like, I would come home and everybody's just, oh, the pets, they're all happy because something happened with one of the pets or just this one of them just wagging the tail. Or there's one of them that, I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. And again, I think a lot of people realize this when they were at home during the pandemic where they couldn't go to work or they were limited on the things that they could do. And like, you
or
know,
or limited with interactive with people.
Exactly. They were in virtual and kids, especially because they're going to school or they couldn't go to school. They couldn't be around their friends. Guess what? There was the pet.
Yeah.
There was, you know, like I said, the fur babies or whatever you want to call them. The bottom line was they're more than just service pets. They're more than just care. They actually comfort people. And I've always known that they comfort seniors. But what you're shedding a light on, mm-hmm. light on, I figured this, but I didn't know for a fact.
Yeah.
It had to help soldiers and veterans.
It definitely does. And it's funny you nailed it because there's something about animals, like a dog. They don't know that there's a pandemic going on.
Yeah.
They don't know that you're having a bad day. They don't know that maybe you think you gained weight or your boyfriend broke up with you or whatever's going on. They are going to love you unconditionally. And what they're able to do is hit that spot that, like I said, that humans can't do or meds or anything, right? And I love the fact that you have your kids because I think it's so important for kids to grow up with animals because of that companionship and having to respect something else that's, you know, that's not a human, right?
Right.
And with what I see with these veterans and how it's able to literally change their lives. I'm not literally like just stating that. It's a true thing that I've seen over time.
Did you see this before you started the foundation? And I want to know how hard it was to get started because, again, a lot of people don't connect the two or the people who might, you know, give you their treasure and their time and their talent may not see it. Like, why a pet or why a dog or a horse?
Right. And I think for me, growing up with animals, like your kids, so I was one of those that was connected more to animals than people, right? Mm-hmm. So I always had this connection with animals, and I always wanted to save every animal on the planet, right? And
by
the
way, our two cats were saved.
See,
and
right?
One of our dogs.
And they know, by the way, when you save them, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
They know that you actually gave them a, you know, second chance at life. So I just always wanted to save everything. I always had this connection with animals. I felt like they were innocent, that they just want to love you. Mm-hmm. You know, that they always say that, you know, you as their owner is their best friend for their entire life. That's all they have. And for us, we go through multiple animals, unfortunately, because, you know,
their lifespan.
So, you know, you just see the difference that animals make. And like I said, just, you know, everyday folks where you see what the extreme measures that it takes to change a veteran and what they're doing, dealing with their mental health and how an animal, obviously we do a lot of training and there's certain things that we have to do. For example, a veteran who deals with night tremors or seizures, and that dog has to be able to have certain tasks that they do, right? Or a service dog. But just even a companion dog for military families, like we do it for when children lose their parent to be deployed, they go through a lot of stress and depression and anxiety, and that we pair a dog that maybe not even, you know, can do the basic commands, Chris, but maybe not a full-blown service or therapy dog. And just by instinct and just because how a dog is, they know how to comfort someone when they're upset. They just know. There's an instinct.
No one thought about that when the parent gets deployed.
Yeah.
I mean, the family is still there.
And they're going through a lot. People don't realize with the family, the wives and the kids, and it's a lot of stress. And so many families have told me, this dog has literally, one lady said, this saved our marriage and saved our family component because of this dog.
I can believe it. Yeah. Okay, so you have the idea to start the foundation.
Yes, sir.
Tell me the steps. Because again, this is a bigger task than a lot of people might think. They may, oh, I have a foundation. Well, guess what? It's like a small business owner. It's the hardest, most bravest, most courageous thing you could do because you're sticking your neck out there and you're hoping it will work out and that a lot of people are depending on you.
Right. And a lot of it lies on me because I'm that person that likes to make sure. I'm not someone who's going to slap my name on something and not be fully involved in it and want to make sure it succeeds and the money's going the right places, you know, and all those different things, right? So
you're not just going to, you want to make sure it's doing exactly what you think it's going to do.
Because it's my passion.
Exactly.
You know, my career is my passion, but my true passion, you know, my heart like loves and that makes me want to get up every day is to make a difference and give back, right? And so with that, it was like, okay, so what do? I'm going to start a foundation. Well, you know, like you said, it's not that easy. So you had to get all the paperwork for tax, you know, ID and nonprofit, 501c3, and get, you know, my staff aligned. And I told everyone, I said, hey, I'm not going to be able to pay you. So you're going to have the same passion as myself because we're not this big, huge organization.
Yeah.
So we're not giving.
You're not the Red Cross.
I'm not paying. Yeah. I'm not paying people. Right. And so everyone's volunteering, which means all of us still have jobs to actually be able to survive. Right. And pay our bills. So I had to have the right people who are able to, you know, different dog trainers, you know, I still have to pay them, but they're maybe going down on their costs a little bit because they understand the mission and they love it and they want to give back. So it's aligning all the different trainers. After we do all the paperwork, it's then getting the trainers, making sure I align myself with all the different veteran hospitals and make sure they know what we're doing, making sure that I have all of our paperwork and all of our, you know, trying to get as many donations and making sure that everyone knows every time someone donates, it could be a dollar, it's going back. It's to us. You know, it's a leash, a call, you know what I mean? Anything. Yeah. People don't realize the expenses. And now adding the horses, I mean, my hay bill is $4,000 a month. Ooh. Just for hay. Right. And so, yeah. And then we've got dog food and we've got, of course, we get sponsors and this and that, but it's always month by month kind of thing, Chris. Exactly. You never know when that's going to end. And so, and these animals, they need to
they're
eat.
Animals.
You know,
somebody's
so people tell me, you work a lot. And I'm like, I've got like 50 mouths to feed.
Exactly. So when you pulled the trigger, I mean, how many months, weeks, days did it take for things to start? I know it's baby steps, but how long did it take for you to be off and running, so to speak?
I think within the first 6 months to a year. But like the 6 months, I think only because I was so ingrained in the veteran community that I had so many resources, Chris, that helped me. You know, my family being military, but then also being aligned with the USO, already doing so much with the veterans hospitals. Doing things with Walter Reed so they knew they could assist me, the Purple Heart Foundation. So different places that I already, Separate Five Fund, I should say, as well. So many different people helped me because they knew that I wasn't a competition with them, Chris. I would be helping them, assisting them, being another resource for them when they have their veterans. Now they can funnel through
to us. And you're able to network that. And your purpose was able to be a reality.
Right.
Because you had these sources. You're like, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, but when I do this, it's going to be pets and it's going to be veterans. And then you're able to utilize all your resources and have it organized and then present it.
And I had to have, you know, I had to put in a lot of favors, not money wise, but just like, hey, I need help with this.
Right.
Like, so American Legion, you know, I'm an auxiliary member, but having to like be able to connect with all of them across the country and also the ones in the community, and then the veterans of foreign wars and, you know, all the different people that kind of just assisted me and helped me, because I was like, okay, well, now I know where I'm going to pull the dogs, because I already had partnerships with all the different shelters, because you have to be a partner to be able just to pull these dogs and be able to vet them and see their kennel notes and all that.
Because they're not going to give
this anybody. Right. And that's the other thing people don't realize. So we're helping the veterans. So we have to vet the veterans who have to go through the VA to make sure, first of all, if they're even a real veteran. Unfortunately, there's people, you know, stolen valor and such. So making sure there's a, you know, that I'm speaking with the doctor to see exactly what their needs are. So I've got to get all that medical clearance as well to be able to see what they actually need. Then I got to be able to have the right dog. So it's like I'm dealing with, Chris, not only just the veteran component, but also the animal services component as well. So it's a lot. And that's why I have different people aligned, like some that just handle just the veteran side. Mm-hmm. Right. And then some that just handle just the, you know, the dog side, and then some that just deal with the horses, because it's hard for everyone to wear multiple hats when it's so important, I should say, to make sure that they really know that category and department of what we're working through. Right.
Right. I get you're making my mind just whirl. I'm enjoying this conversation so much. So you travel all over the world with the USO, right?
Yes, sir.
How many years?
I did 19 USO tours. I started with the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders on my first tour to Bosnia. And then as grateful that I was able to have success on my own in my career. And then he started asking me, hey, will you come over and MC all of our events with Wayne Newton, the late Toby Keith, and different celebrities. And we go and entertain, I'm sure you've seen on stage, and entertain the troops. And then what people don't see is that afterwards, us having one-on-ones with all the different soldiers and Marines and things like playing poker with them and cards and just a lot of them just
give
want
them
someone
normalcy wherever they are in the world.
You nailed it. And that's what I always say. I said, hey, not only are we entertaining, we're trying to break up the monotony of the day. Because when I went, this is war zones, right? So they're seeing a lot. And these are kids, Chris. I mean, I'm talking
early 20s.
Oh, some of them are 18, 19 year old babies, right? Front lines, right? Right. You know, infantry that are just they're babies, right? And so they don't even know. They know what they're fighting over there for our country, but I don't think they even understand like really what's going on, because they're over there during the holidays and they're trying to like kind of navigate through all this. And so bringing a piece of America to them, trying to break up the monotony, and then just being, you know, kind of, to be honest, like a shoulder to cry on. There's a lot of young kids that literally would just tell me everything that's going on. I just saw my, you know, my best friend get, you know, killed in action, mm-hmm. you know, different things like that. So
that's the trauma. That's the grief. That's right. the things that a lot of people don't understand because they're not in a war.
And they're a soldier. So they're supposed to have this, you know,
demeanor of strength.
Right.
And
bravery. And I'm not affected, but I am affected. And it's exactly. a very hard waters to navigate through. And so I became really close with many of the men and women over there. When I got back, I would still... chat with them and different things yeah. to the point where one of the soldiers was killed in action over there, an IED bomb. And the mother said, "Hey, you made such a difference." I'm going to get teary eyed, but you made such a difference in my son's life
mm-hmm.
that we want to invite you to the funeral.
Oh my goodness. Ronnie Jill. I'm
sorry.
No. This is what people need to know. And I also want to know, and I see tears in your eyes. Where did you get the epiphany to match the pets with the veterans? Because again, I don't know if someone else ever thought of it before, but it takes a lot of work. But at the same time, you knew that this would probably help these guys or these young ladies who are overseas or who came back from the war.
Right. I think,
or families who are,
I think, Chris, because I saw the military working dogs over there.
Oh, okay.
So you spend a lot of time with the military working dogs, all the SF guys, which is means special forces. So you see the companionship, the partnership mm-hmm. that they have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're working dogs, right? So these are bomb sniffing dogs.
Right. They're like the ones of police dogs here.
Right, exactly. And the MPs, the military police mm-hmm. dogs. So you see that. And so I think that kind of like,
triggered it.
Wait a second. Look at that partnership and the respect they have for each other in a working environment. And I see what dogs do for just myself and my friends and family and, just being that companion, that best friend
mm-hmm.
that, hey, let's see how this works. And we knew service dogs for individual, blind
sure.
service dogs and all that stuff, assisting disabled civilians as well. So I just kind of thought, let's see how we can get these veterans off these pills. I think the biggest thing was knowing how much they're over-medicated.
Yeah,
and the meds, and it really bothered me because...
You know what? I'm glad you're shedding some light on this because a lot of people don't know that.
Now, 27 pills that someone's taking every day.
To cope. Because that's what it's supposed to be,
to cope. But now they're telling me they're hallucinating.
Mm-hmm.
They're feeling suicidal thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not helping them, Chris,
no.
right? And so I have seen literally with all the veterans, they've all been on meds, let me first say that. And then once you pair them up with a dog, they're usually 1 to 2 meds after that. That is it.
Wow.
Off of 27. And wow. now imagine how loaded you feel your body when you're almost robotic, comatose. Mm-hmm. So now that helps. And now they're able to feel some clarity in their head as well and work through, because not to say that they're still not going to have some problems. So having the dog and still going to their counselor and therapist,
sure.
that combination, it just makes a whole difference in their
right.
perspective in life too. And they also don't feel so dependent
mm-hmm.
on something that they're taking every mm-hmm. day. So it's been kind of mind blowing. And what we have done is bringing a lot of the veterans and dogs to Capitol Hill and showing, everyone on the House side and then also on the Senate side and seeing. And so we have all these different bills and pilot programs. So we can definitely try to eventually get, there's
the funding.
But you look at like the government aspect of, I'm not going to get down that road, but there is that pharmaceuticals. They want to keep,
right.
pushing that out. But I'm like, this is the alternative,
right.
the healthy alternative and what mm-hmm. works.
Exactly. What works? Cause you're just not.
So instead of funding this side, why don't you, and I'm not saying right. taking away from that, cause there is
right.
still some aspect where you do need that,
sure.
but
let's reduce some of all of this.
Funding us in different
yes.
groups that do the same thing.
Right. So whose idea was it to take a vet and a pet to Congress? Because
me.
I think that, yeah, because sometimes
yeah.
it's a visual.
Yeah.
You just have to see it and not just talk about it. And it'd be better to have somebody there as opposed to a video on a screen or something.
Right, because I would go into many of these offices and you meet with the staffers and you meet with
right.
the chief of staff and you meet through
tape.
All the, and then you finally meet with the members and so forth. And of course, it helped. They'd be like, oh, there's a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader out here that's talking about some bill. And mm-hmm. then they're like, oh. Hey,
I've got a minute.
I'm a football fan. Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
All of a sudden, I have a minute.
Go
and then,
Cowboys.
Right, or no, mm-hmm. I'm a Redskins fan, but
right.
hey, I love the
yeah.
Cowboy cheerleaders.
Right.
So it was kind of a way to get in through that, but then showing them, hey, okay, I'm telling you about this mission. You're saying this is great, but visually, let me bring in a veteran and a dog. Let him from the horse's mouth and tell you the difference it's made. I can tell you until I'm blue in the face, but I'm not the one receiving the dog, right, Chris? So let me bring in a veteran, multiple veterans from different situations, different branches, different needs, different dog breeds, different situations where the dogs, you know, because all these dogs are coming from different situations as well. Abusive, you know, situations, everything. And
they're
show you.
Pets.
Yeah. And show you. And that made a huge, huge difference. Plus, again, just to reiterate, now the congressmen and senators are down on their knees hugging this dog.
Right. Because it's helping them too, ironically.
Because they're stressed and they're out the day. And so they said, it was funny, one office said, one of the Florida congressmen said, now, do you know that we have a dog in our, one of our chief of staff now has a dog in our building, in our office? Mm-hmm. And they said, the senator and the congressman and all the people in the hallways are in a better mood.
You want to hear something
wild? Funny?
It's very ironic and very funny. It's just a side plot here. But you mentioned, you know, how it pets can lift people up.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this for the whole segment here.
Yeah.
Did you know the Dallas Mavericks have a dog?
I know, but didn't he pass away?
Yes. But they're going to get another one, unfortunately, and, you know, age. But at the same time, they had one. Mm-hmm. Some teams don't even think that
I know,
way.
And I love, what was his name?
Can't remember.
I know, but I remember seeing that. And I think he was a Golden Lab or something. Yeah. I loved that because I remember I actually mentioned on the show a bunch of times. I was like, oh, I love that. And everyone said, like in the building, you probably could attest to this, that you're just seeing a dog wagging its tail. I don't know what it is.
Here's the deal. And I'm pulling this full circle because you understand because you've lived the life in the world of sports. These guys get stressed out too. Like not as much as veterans. Don't get me wrong. Not as much as service, but at the same time, they deal with things. And sometimes for them, not just a dog in the building, but they go home to a pet.
Right.
There's a lot of athletes, no matter what the sport, cowboy players, football players, basketball, hockey, softball, baseball, all of them, they have pets to help them, just like their families. If some of them may not have kids and a wife, and they're like, whew, at least I got my pal.
Got my companion also to decompress.
Exactly.
Because dogs don't talk, so they're not going to be in your ear, right? They're not going to judge you. They're not going to ask you. Maybe you just don't want, you just want silence and a dog right there. And we see what's going on with, you know, football, hockey, CTE, that's a whole thing. That's almost like a PTSD in a different way with TBI, trauma to the brain. And so, again, it's dogs. I mean, I'm telling you, Chris, these animals, they just have something that that humans can't provide.
Exactly. And there's so much, seriously, mental support.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little things like you don't have to have a pill.
Yeah.
You said something about the horse's mouth. How did the horses become involved?
So I grew up on a horse ranch and I'm a barrel racer and my dad owns thoroughbreds, racehorses, all that stuff. And so again,
rodeo.
Oh yeah.
If you wanted to.
I do. I rope, I do everything. I live on a horse ranch now. Yeah. So, it's great because again, dogs, just like horses, I don't know how much you've been around horses, Chris, but they're something magical about horses, right? You know, some people who've never been around a horse are like, wow, it's like seeing a unicorn, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, there's something in their eyes, something in their soul. And what's funny about horses, and it's all about energy, right? Mm-hmm. And I always go back to energy when it comes to horses and veterans, because if a veteran is uptight and stressed out, the horse is going to not be comfortable, right?
Yeah.
Where dogs are a little different, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost like you're working together with the horse, because if you get on a horse and you have bad energy, you know what's going to happen? He's going to buck you off.
Yep.
So whenever you get on a horse, you have to be calm, and it keeps you... That's why when I get on a horse, it's like my serenity. I'm peaceful. It's like my yoga. You know, you can just like sit in the saddle and just relax, right? Where a veteran has to earn that. Now they're calm.
Uh-huh.
The horse is calm. Now they're able to relate to maybe a situation that stressed them out in the beginning, because a horse can be intimidating. And it's amazing, again, to show, and I've got videos, Chris, but it's amazing to see how it takes. It's not instant.
Right.
So
they have to earn each other's trust.
Yes, and then once they do, the horse is following the veteran around without a lead. Just amazing, and they're not even in the saddle yet.
Mm-hmm.
But they've gained that trust. I always say groundwork is so important with a horse, because you get that relationship on the ground. Now a horse is like, oh yeah, get on my back, because you know what I mean. We've got that
trust. Yeah, I got to ask you this, because like I said, you're talking about horses.
Yeah,
and I've been around horses quite a bit, not as much as you by any means, but last weekend was the Breeders' Cup, which is...
I was working.
Okay, you were down there in Del Mar. The Breeders'
Where
Cup...
Where the surf meets the turf.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Olympics for horse racing.
Yes, and right? I try to tell people, Kentucky Derby, which I go every year, is the most high profile, but the Breeders' Cup is international the highest stakes money.
Exactly, and from all five continents.
Oh, we had Ireland, Japan, yes, the Middle East.
Yes, everywhere.
You name it.
So you're going down the path I'm going.
Yeah.
So I'm interviewing a couple of jockeys different days about races, right?
Oh, are you?
Yeah. I already did.
A jockey is actually, my godfather's a jockey.
Oh, very good. So this is the perfect question for you because everybody, the text went crazy after I asked this question. And to this day, all this week, people have been asking me, that was a really good question. So I'm going to ask you the same question.
Okay.
And I just want your honest opinion because I loved the jockey's answers too. The question I had was, do horses know if they won? Do you think horses know?
They do. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'm a barrel racer, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know what that is, but it's the clover leaf and you get timed going around the barrels, right? Mm-hmm. My mare, her name's Elsa, she, before we even go in the gate, she is raring to go. I got to calm her down, back her up and be like, no, we're not. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, we go around and she's, you know, blaring just down, you know, the finish line. And it's crazy because then when I'm just, you know, loping around and there's another horse loping around. Now, all of a sudden she's picking it up. And I'm like, no, Elsa, we're just working.
We're just working.
And when that horse starts to now go, she goes too. And she wants to win. I mean, every time, and everyone laughs and goes, do horses like know when they're competing? And then they're with, I go, oh, heck yeah.
They know. And they want to win. They want to win because great things happen. They can tell the whole atmosphere just
changes.
And there
is a hierarchy with animals. So with horses, they know I won and you were behind me.
I'm telling you.
And that's why when you see horses also, when they come back, you know, they make the loop and they come back to the winner's circle. Do you see how they prance? And they're looking. I mean,
there was
like California Chrome used to be like, I don't know if you remember California Chrome, but he used to come down and literally was looking like, take my photo. Like I won. And when they put the flowers on them, trust me, they know. Animals are smarter than you think.
So you're down there at the Breeders' Cup. Tell me, you said you were working. What were you doing?
Yeah, so I interviewed jockeys, trainers, everyone do features. I did a feature on the exercise riders. And because I grew up on, you know, on the track, the backstretch was like a second home to me. So just kind of getting people to know it's not just, there's so many components to horse racing, not just the horse. You've got the jockey, like I said, the exercise rider. Then you've got the trainers. You've got, you know, assistant trainers. You've got the owner. Some people think the owners are the trainer. You know, just to kind of give like the 101 to people who don't understand horse racing. Mm-hmm. And then handicapping. Like I know how to tear up a form and I still won't win, but I handicap.
But you know what you do.
So I'm blue in the face. And then my friend who says, I like that horse. It's pretty. She wins, right? But but how to bet.
It usually goes that way.
You know, how to bet and, you know, all that good stuff. But it's, I go, God, I've worked probably 20 Breeders' Cup and about 23 Kentucky Derbies.
You look like you're 20 years old. There's no way.
Yeah, I'm old, Chris.
No. You're seasoned. That's the best way to put it.
I'm going to use that. I'm seasoned.
Well, I was also wondering on the sly, were you networking to say, you know what? I know horses and vets need to be put together. And I
love that you said this, Chris, because also when I'm talking about my bills on Capitol Hill, you know what helps me? When I can say I've got a Mike Smith that's supportive of what I'm doing.
Yes.
When I've got, you know, I hate to say it because sometimes he's looked down upon, but he has been, has helped
Dwayne
me.
Lucas?
Bob Baffert.
Yeah.
Bob and Jill Baffert. Yeah. They've supported me. I don't agree with some of the stuff that's happened, but I won't get into that. But, you know, when you get the different, Dwayne Lucas, he's amazing. Mm-hmm. He's a real cowboy as well. So having different Kent DeSormo, having him as well, all these different jockeys, Calvin Burrell, you have the different jockeys who are supporting what I'm doing as well. So I've been able to, like Mike Smith joined me on Capitol Hill before.
Right.
And so it was via Zoom, but he was still there and he was able to tell, you know, the senators and congressmen, like why, you know, this works.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's worth it.
And the same thing when you go onto the dogs, I have Bruce Bochy is one of my ambassadors. Yeah.
Rangers.
Bochy has been a friend of mine forever when I covered the Giants and now here. And you know, Michael Irvin, I've had so many different people, Marshall Falk, I can go on and on,
helps open doors.
Who love what we're doing.
Yes.
And then I have to say, I got to call in favors. Hey, we're trying to get this bill passed, or hey, I need to raise money for this, or hey, can you do a meet and greet with a fan because we can raise money for you to do that, or even a FaceTime or whatever it is to raise awareness. And you know what's funny? As much as people think that athletes sometimes do things only when the camera's on them, no. Majority of the athletes that I work with that are ambassadors love veterans and want to help and want to help the recovery and say, hey, of course, and love that the fact that we're saving a dog, you know,
yes.
So it's a kind of a win-win. And the fact that they can be involved in some component. We all know the athletes, they love their dogs.
They do. We were just talking about it again, because they have to deal with all kinds of stresses, not just staying in shape, not just trying to keep their job, but, you know, with social media and the pressures of if you don't win, you suck. And
look at, you know, baseball players, they bring dogs to the yard all the time.
All the time. They have a dog day out there.
Yes.
At the Rangers.
Exactly.
Yep.
And some of the guys will have their dogs in the clubhouse, you know?
Exactly.
So.
Some of them have tigers.
I know.
Back
in
the day, Julio Franco, he had a little tiger he would bring in there.
Oh,
it's crazy.
God. Yeah. Well, anything, right?
Pets. All I can say is pets soothe. And I like the fact that you're matching them up with people who may be able to appreciate it even more. And sometimes they don't even know they can appreciate it until they're matched up.
Right. And there's some veterans that when I first, you know, met them, I'm like, ugh, he seems a little closed off and,
right.
you know, not talking. And
right.
Not I didn't necessarily mean, but a little bit
just guarded.
Guarded, a little loss, a little,
right.
you know, just almost a little bit. You can see some sorrow there, right?
Yes. So,
and then now they talk my ear off.
Oh, that's great.
So it's almost like they opened up a piece of their soul that they always say a pet sometimes can awaken a part of your soul that hasn't been awakened before.
Exactly.
So
where are you now with the hounds, the horses, the vets? Where is everything?
So we're in Fort Worth, and it's called Battle Buddies Ranch.
Okay.
And we have, not only do we have horses and dogs that we do all of this for veterans, we also have pigs that I've rescued, and goats, and donkeys, and emus, and chickens. So when the family comes out of the veteran, they have a chance to just run around and have fun as well. Because all these animals, I mean, you know, there's a lot of little kids, they've never seen an emu. They've never seen a pig.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is so fun. And so, you know, it's a place that you can just let your hair down, enjoy the animals, and it's a safe zone.
It's a safe zone, and you have a website where people can find out more information.
Yes, Chris. It's houndsandheroes.com, and the heroes is H-E-R-O-E-S, heroes.com. And we don't have .org because someone got it before us and then asked us to pay $10,000.
No.
So that's why people sometimes wonder why we don't have .org. That's why.
Where do you find the time to do all of this?
I don't sleep, Chris. So
there's no way, because you're in tip-top shape.
Yeah.
You look great. I'm telling you, you look like you're in college.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, my whole life is my career and giving back. So that's all I'm not married yet because I've always screwed up my relationships by just focusing too much on my career and charity.
And then you have to relieve your stress by visiting your animals.
Exactly. That's it. And so for me, it's also, I don't know, as much as it's helping them, it also helps me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean by that? Like it feels my soul.
It does.
You know?
You have a purpose-driven life.
Yes. And we do, and it's, you know, as much as we do with the animals, we do so much in the community as well. Like, we'll be doing veterans who are homeless, and we'll be feeding them during Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. We do so much for the military children during Christmas. So we try to do as much as we can, but our main mission, Chris, is pairing the dogs and the horses with veterans.
We got to have back on real soon. Bonnie Jill,
thank you so much, Chris. This is fun.
And thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.